We are, kind of still thinking about, as we have been for several months, and I really don't see any end in sight, but really thinking about the idea of spiritual formation, of becoming what God intends for us to become in every aspect and every part of our lives, for every part of our lives to come more and more completely under the kingdom, the kingship of God. And we started looking at the book of Proverbs a couple weeks ago. We're going to be there, I think, for a while. And Proverbs is the most, is, I think, easily the most practical book in the Bible. Right? It, and anybody look at it since then? You know, you were challenged to two people, Travis, four people. Well, that's a handful. That's good. You know, Travis shared the one he really liked. What was it? It was basically about not talking a lot. So Travis really appreciated that when he said, "This is why. This is me." 10:19, go ahead and read it.
Too much talk leads to sin. Be sensible and keep your mouth shut.
See how practical that is? But at the same, that's a really good illustration of what Proverbs is. And these are very well-crafted little statements. They're kind of like mini poems, okay? And it's, but they're very well crafted, okay? I mean, we could talk about that one verse for, for a long time, right? But it's just, it's condensed. It's this mountain of wisdom condensed into just a few sentences. And it's, you can't argue with that. I mean, how many people do you know that talk too much and has led to sin? Yeah. How many people, have their mouths have gotten them into trouble? Yeah, one person, Tracy. She's the only one. But yeah, I mean, see, that's just timeless wisdom. That's wisdom from God. That's what so many of these proverbs are, these little mini poems, these two-line, miniature poems. It's just very incredibly well-crafted that condenses down this ages-long wisdom. And it's so practical, so very practical.
Me and Jamie did a word study about the word proverb. Uh-huh. And we learned a vocabulary word I had never heard before, and it used the word pithy.
Mm-hmm.
Which means putting an extreme amount of force into a very small statement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there you go. There's a vocabulary word. See, even that, I could just say pithy instead of talking for 2 minutes about that. Yeah, it condenses down to so much power and so much wisdom, and it's so practical. I mean, they're kind of randomly split up. There's not really strong sense of order. They do somewhat flow, but at the same time, there's a lot of randomness in them. But with that aside, it's very practical. Okay, and if we take these things seriously, it really has the potential to change and improve our lives. So it's very practical, but it takes somebody like me to make this very impractical, and that's what we're going to do today. We're not going to start with the practicality. We're going to start with a little bit of theoreticalness, I suppose, today, because I want us to know why. That we care, why it's important to let these pithy sayings shape our lives. I want us to know, I want us to be able to think about why and the purpose and the big picture, the perspective of why we talk about spiritual formation. Why do we want to be more like the people God made us to be? Okay? Because there could be some confusion, and I don't want there to be any. So let's start here in Proverbs 2. I don't think about this word today, about this notion of the righteous. That is something that's just through and through Proverbs and really all the Bible. But Proverbs 2, we read this before. It says, "My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding. Indeed, if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, if you look for it as for silver, if you search for it as for hidden treasure." So if you apply yourself, if you cry out for it, if you search for wisdom, if you search for knowing how to live your life, if you take your life seriously and take following God seriously, if you take spiritual formation seriously, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From His mouth come knowledge and understanding. He holds success in store for the upright. He is a shield to those whose walk is blameless. He guards the course of the just and protects the way of His faithful ones. If you cry aloud, if you search for it like buried treasure, if you apply yourself to living this sort of a life, that God enters into partnership with you in this. It's not like He's giving you a grade. You know, this teacher, you know, giving you a grade sheet, or this life isn't a quiz. So if you apply yourself into living this way, say God enters this partnership into it with you. God gives you wisdom. God gives you understanding. God protects you. God holds success in store for you as you pursue this way of life of His. Right? So the first thing, you know, to keep in mind that spiritual formation or becoming like God or living a wise life or however you want to say it, this best term is the righteous, however you want to say that, it's not so you can earn something from God, okay? It's not a method to get things from God. So if you do this, then you will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path, for wisdom will enter your heart. And knowledge will be pleasant to your soul, and the discretion will protect you, and understanding will guard you. Later on it says, thus you will walk in the ways of the good and keep to the paths of the righteous. For the upright will live in the land, and those with integrity will remain in it, but the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the unfaithful will be torn from it. When you think about the word righteous, the righteous people, the righteousness. What do you think about? What does righteous mean? Perfect time for me to take a drink of water, because now is when you... What is righteous? What do you think about? What does righteous typically bring to mind? For me, I always think about like a religious or morality-based righteousness, right? When someone's self-righteous, what do you mean? When you call someone self-righteous, what do you mean?
They think they're really good.
They think they're really good, right? If someone is self-righteous, they think they're better than everybody else. And when you see the word righteous, I think we're kind of drawn in our culture, at least I was, to think about this religious piety, right? Keeping all the rules, you know, going all to the services and so on and so forth. All those boxes checked. But that's not really the implication here, is it? Look at this in context. And one way to think about, a word in this Hebrew poetry, like we talked about in Hebrew poetry and Psalms, and I think Proverbs kind of follows a lot of the same patterns, but it restates the same idea for emphasis, right? So keep the path of the righteous, and the upright will live in the land. Those with integrity will remain in it. So you look at righteous, you can define righteous by its synonyms as it restates and as it refines, the idea within this poetry. So what does righteous mean? It's a lot like upright. What does upright mean? It doesn't mean you stand up straight, but it's kind of that idea. You're going down the right path. You're honest. You're headed down the right path is the main implication, right? And, you know, in a more plain English, is integrity. Someone who's righteous is headed down the right path in their life, right? Is on the right track with their life. Someone who has integrity. Okay? Now, is that the same thing as religious piety? Now, religious piety can be a part of that. Certain forms, at least, of religious piety can be a part of that. That's not at all the same thing, is it? Huh. I mean, how many people have you known? I mean, is it possible to be extremely religious, extremely pious, and to have zero integrity? Yeah, you know, I've been there before. That's far more than just possible. So righteous, you know, we think of it this way. One whose way of thinking, feeling, and acting is wholly conformed to the will of God. And therefore, who therefore needs no rectification in heart of heart or life. Now that's a big goal to measure up to. When I think about the righteous, you know, the ultimate righteousness. It's this sort of thing. Where all this stuff we've been talking about, your thoughts and your emotions and your will, it's all on the right track. It's all on the right path. It's all conformed to the life God has designed us to live, right? So what you think about, you know, the way you're related to your emotions and your emotional life is healthy, and your choices, the things you do with your will, what you decide to do, all of these things are completely and wholly, just holistically integrated into the life that God designed for you and integrated into the will of God, okay? And that is way different than religious piety, okay? And so that's why all of these proverbs are so important. Let's look at it this way. It's important to note before I go on to talk about proverbs, it's important to know that you don't attain righteousness and do all the stuff and act good and get your emotions healthy and your choices healthy and be a real good person, and then God shines favor on you and likes you, right? And that's when he saves you. Yeah, the righteous people, it starts with, by being made right by this completely and utterly free gift of God. And then as a result of that, or not to earn that, but as a result of that, we start to intentionally shape our lives in the life he has designed for us. The righteous is also someone who has been made right with God and begins to live right. To live right as a result. So that's why all of this stuff in Proverbs, it seems so random. And it's really broad, encompasses a whole, almost every aspect of human life is contained in here. And it's all really important. Because following God is not about religious piety. That's not the goal. Coming to church isn't the goal. Following the rules isn't the goal. Right? And really, at the end of the day, survival isn't the goal. Going to heaven when you die isn't the goal. That's an incredibly important part of it. Right? It's essential. But if you look very carefully, if you look very... Just think about the pattern in all of Paul's, most of Paul's letters. He was writing to a group of people. You know, there would be a controversy or a question that he would write this letter to address. Or sometimes it was simply a letter of greeting or encouragement, you know, keeping the lines of communication open with this group of people. He always started with a theological treatise, right? This theological foundation he would build up in the first part of his letter. And then there was the therefore. There's an application. I mean, read Ephesians, read Colossians, even Romans if you read it carefully. There's this theological foundation, this theological treatise, and then there's a therefore. What is the therefore always? Therefore, live a life worthy of your calling. Therefore, treat each other right. Therefore, live a life of love and grace and peace. Therefore, love God and love people. Therefore, be this certain kind of person. Right? And so all of this stuff in Proverbs is incredibly important because it's all part of that. It's all related to living in the kingdom of God, being a child of God. So that's why it's important to think about what we do with money and our relationship with money. It's incredibly important. That's why it's incredibly important to think about how we raise our kids. It's incredibly important to think about our, you know, interpersonal and marriage relationships. It's incredibly important. It's important to think about and to see what God has to say about how we are to think about work and our occupation and what we do with our hands, what we do for a living. It's all incredibly important because it's all related to life. And it's all part of being the righteous. It's all part of being righteous. Now, so when I talk about when we say righteous moving forward, we're not thinking about really religious people, right? Or being really pious, right? Or just obeying this set of rules, okay? Somebody give me a nod. Sorry, but just what are we thinking about? We're thinking about people whose whole lives they've got it together. They're living like they should be living as children of God. And their marriage relationships, their family relationships, at work, how they handle their money, the whole shooting match, their sexuality, the whole shooting match. It's all headed down the right path, okay? That's what we talk about when we say the righteous. And it's really important to know, you know, that we're not talking about all this stuff so that you can make your life as good as possible for you. Okay? Right? It's incredibly important. Let's take money, for instance. Okay? We're supposed to steward our resources. Let's be diligent with our resources, right? We should have certain sorts of relationships with our resources. And we'll talk about that more in detail later on. Right? Why? Is it just so I can make sure I've got a bunch of money? Let's go. It's not an inward focus. It's not selfishness what we're talking about. Because look at this, Proverbs 11. Because when the righteous... Again, it's not the religious people. The people who've got it together, the people in the kingdom of God who are living correctly are on the right path. When the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. When the wicked perish, there are shouts of joy. And through the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted. But by the mouth of the wicked, it is destroyed. When the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. So when our lives are together, when we are spiritually formed into the image of God, we are, you know, consumed by His kingdom and covered by His kingdom, when we are on the right path, it bleeds over. Okay? It bleeds over. I want to think about when the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. I want to think about our city, so to speak. You know, where we are in the world. Because does it need some rejoicing? Do we have any problems here? A handful, right? Just one or two little things here and there. You know, I guess it's okay to say this story, but if it's not, too bad. But, I mean, it's a perfect encapsulation. It's kind of an encapsulation of the situation in so many people's lives around here. You know, there's this child, this couple, and they have made, you know, bad choices through their lives. There were drugs involved. You know, there's, you know, little young children that were just, you know, had all sorts of problems. And the mother died, right? And at the mother's funeral, the man, I don't know whether they're married or not, but the man, he came, you know, tweaking out on meth, wouldn't go into the actual funeral where the mother of his children, you know, was being held. But instead, put out in the parlor, you know, blasting rap music on a boombox and got, you know, real belligerent, and they called the cops, and he got physical with the cops, and he was arrested. So social services came to the funeral to take the kids somewhere safe. Now, imagine the effect. You're a child, and you're at your mother's funeral, and you see your father stoned out of his head, belligerent, physical fight with the cops and arrested, and you are taken by social services from your mother's funeral. Now, do we have problems around here? You know, it's hard not to joke about it because I don't know what else to do sometimes. But our culture, our area has devolved to the unimaginable degree just over my lifetime. You know, there's so much drug abuse, that's a huge part of it. You know, that's, you know, one of the roots of it. And that leads to so many broken families. And so many kids who have just nobody and no hope and no way out. And you have so many, you don't have to go that extreme. You have so many people just doing stupid things, making stupid decisions in their lives, decisions that hurt the people around them, that hurt the people they should be pouring themselves out in love to. Think about the way people talk to each other, even in public, people you don't know. Who's heard a domestic argument vehemently in public? Do you know how evil that is? How destructive that is? How stupid that is? What a sign of immaturity and unrighteousness. Something as simple as that is. That is just the ocean that we swim in. You know, I love this area. I was born here, you know, I guess I'll never leave. And bred here, I love, you know, and there's so much of the connection between the people and the place. And, you know, I've told you the stories before about, you know, my grandparents' generation, you know, grew up, you know, sharecroppers and there's so much heritage and history in this area. But we're on the cusp of it being just irrevocably, permanently broken. I mean, if this, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? You know how different the world is over the last 25 years since I was a teenager. If that much has happened in that span of time, what is the next generation? Right? What are the lives of the children of this generation going to be like? It's our city. Needs rejoicing desperately. And it's not just, you know, it's not just the, you know, the dope heads out of the trailer parks. So many aspects of our lives, broken relationships. To lack of peace that needs rejoicing. So that's why we have to take spiritual formation seriously. Right? That's why it's important for us, the righteous, or the prospectively righteous, To have our emotional health, have our thought lives under control. Have our emotional life healthy. To learn how to know how to make good decisions and have the fortitude to make those good decisions. Every aspect of our life. Because our prospering, not just in terms of getting a bunch of money, I hope you can understand that, but our prospering and love and peace and joy in our lives, our prospering is what's going to make this city rejoice. Your lives, our lives, in our home life, whether we're married or not, in our, you know, how we're raising our kids, how we're treating our kids, and within our marriages, how we and who we are at work and with our jobs, what we do with our money, all of these things, and every aspect of this, we should be like oases in this desert, right? Our lives should be so full of peace and joy and beauty that it just bleeds out into the people around us. Proverbs 11 says, a generous person will prosper. Again, this idea of prosperity, not of getting a bunch of money, though that's, you know, that's related and that's part of it, right? But think about this. I mean, is building wealth biblical? Yes. Unequivocally front to back. Okay? Now, there's a lot more to be said with that. There's a lot more to be said about that. I don't want to go too far down that rabbit trail. There's a relationship to our resources, to our money, particular sort of relationship we're supposed to have. We're not to build trust in that, not to build pride in that. We're not to do that at the expense of others, and we are to be, above all else, whatever resources we have, we are to be generous. Right? And it's generosity, whether it's our resources, whether it's money, or whether it's time, or whether it's with relational capital. Generous people. However, and whatever aspect of generosity you want to think about, generous people will prosper. Doesn't mean the more money you give away, the more money you get. That's not what it says. Because your life will bloom if you are generous. If you're generous with other people, if you're a giving sort of person, if you're generous with your time, with your resources, with everything, with your love and with your care and concern, your life will bloom. And whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. So as I talk about all this, it's hard not to have, especially coming out of that, what I just talked about with our area here, it's hard not to have this sense of hate and blah, 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 blah. But the sort of life and the sort of generosity and the sort of other-centeredness that we're talking about, it's not as heavy sort of a weight. Being a generous person whose life blooms, that's not, oh man, I got to do that. That's a beautiful life. It's the best possible way to live. And you're refreshed. When you're generous with someone else, it's not that you're refreshed because they give it back to you. You're fresh because that's the way people were designed to live. It's refreshing to give because that's how people were designed to live. People were designed to be giving. People were designed to be generous. Because we were made in the image of God, who is incredibly, unbelievably giving and generous. In some ways, it feels good to live a life of sin and darkness, right? It's very cathartic to lash out at somebody when you get a little ticked off over something. You know, it may feel good to, you know, abuse your sexuality and all of these other things, right? But it feels so much better to live the life God designed us to live. There's so much death in this, you know, this city all around us, so much darkness. But it says the mouth of the righteous. Again, not the righteous in terms of religion, but, you know, okay, I don't have to keep restating that. What does it say? The mouth of the righteous is what? A fountain of life. The words we say and the way we speak should be just like this fountain just pouring out life. Those around us. Think about this in their original context. If you were, you know, nomadic people, you know, herding your animals through a, you know, semi-arid region, what was this? What would an artesian well, this big bubbling spring, be like? Man, just this this rejoicing. That's the, you know, the thing that says the mouth of the righteous, the things we say. And it's not just the things you say that fountain out life, that calls life to bubble out all around you. The things you create, it's the general way you treat people. Think about this. Who knows what this picture is? We all do. Unless she's not here because Sarah's face would get so red it would like to turn on fire, you know, burst into flames. Okay. Everybody know the story of this? Raise your hand if you know this story. Steve didn't know this story. You don't know the story? Okay. All right. So, Sarah Long, our dear Sarah Long, Doug had mentioned something about like an eagle's or something, or wishing he had a picture of an eagle. So Sarah Long created this amazing work of art, this watercolor. Okay, now it is an amazing picture when you see it in person. She is so skilled at creating this, right? But worked for weeks and weeks, you know, at her classes and then at home too, to create this work of art. All right, and then, you know, the family went and had it framed and all, and they presented it to Doug. And Doug was just, they just flabbergasted. Okay, and I know Doug, and this is probably one of the nicest things anybody's ever done for Doug. Like, really. Now, why did Sarah do that? Why would she do that? That's just kind of the person she is. When was the last time any, you know, a lot of you people do the same sorts of thing? You know, she could make Shelly a scarf like this long, colored like what? We didn't bring it, did we? Yeah, this Newt Scamander's scarf from one of the new Harry Potter movie, right? It's like 5 feet long, not like that wide. In this pattern, you know, from this movie. Okay, I don't know how long it takes to make a scarf. Does anybody in here know? Probably more than 5 minutes, right? All right. And did this because she knew Shelly liked the movie and liked that character. And so she did this and just gave it to Shelly. Just at a random day. Okay? Now that's not just sweet. Okay? That's not just nice. Pouring yourself out for someone else. You know, knowing that person and just quietly for no other reason than to bring them joy. That's not just sweet or nice. That's revolutionary. That is a weapon against the powers of darkness. That is a weapon that wins. And that's generosity. And that's the kind of refreshing that refreshes. Do you think she painted this? You're like, oh, man, I got to hurry up and get this done so I can give it to old Doug. Like, man, there's so too many. I wonder how many shortcuts I can take to get Shelly's scarf done. I'm so tired of this. That's the kind of refreshing that refreshes. That's righteousness. That's righteousness. And like we said before, it's not about religious piety. Isaiah 58. Is this a fast Is a fast like this which I choose, a day for a man to humble himself, for bearing one's head like a reed, and for spreading out sackcloth and ashes as a bed? Will you call this a fast, even an acceptable day to the Lord? And you just read that and you're like, yeah, I guess you kind of would. This really intense religious activity. You know, because they're saying, man, we fasted, why haven't you heard us? We prayed, why haven't you answered our prayers? And God says, God points out their religious activity. He says, is this what I want? Over much of my life, I could say, yeah, I thought so. That's what everybody else has always done. But then he says, it's not this kind of fasting I have chosen. To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and to break every yoke. It's not to share your food with the hungry and bribe poor wanderer with shelter. And when you see the naked, to clothe them and not turn away from your own flesh and blood. Then your light will break forth like the dawn and your healing will quickly appear. Your righteousness will go before you and the glory of your Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call and the Lord will answer. Then you will cry for help and he will say, here I am. This is the kind of fast I chose. If you come to church to encounter God, you are coming to church for the wrong reasons. If you are coming to church to encounter God, that means there is a serious problem in your life. If he is not present with you and in you every day, that is the first thing that needs to be rectified before we can pretend to begin to be righteous. I do not come to church to encounter God. I come to church to encounter you guys. And we need each other to live this kind of life. Religious activity is not going to cause our city to rejoice. That your lives do and can and will if you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk. How about that? Yeah, we can do away with the yoke of oppression. I've been, you know, reading a lot about the Civil War lately, you know, abolition. We can abolish slavery. We can make sure and fix, you know, these social problems. We're not racist, and we'll sign on for that. But in the same category, do you understand this? In the same category, the same breath as oppression and slavery is what? Talking about people behind their back. Okay? If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, if you spend yourselves on behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and strengthen your frame. You'll be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Again, this idea of this spring pouring out into this parched land. What is the spring that's going to be pouring out into this parched land in this context, in this sentence? What is it? You. Us. The righteous. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins. This heritage has been broken down. And you will raise up the age-old foundations. And you will be called repairer of the breach. Restorer of streets to dwell in. Ephesians 4, this is, you know, we read here all the time. It's important to know that I'm not talking about social work, as good as that is. I'm not talking about programs and just doing good things, doing good deeds. But let the Spirit renew your thoughts and attitudes. Put on your new nature, created to be like God, truly righteous and holy. Let the Spirit renew your thoughts and attitudes. I'm not talking about social work. I'm talking about being so full up with God that He pours out. He just oozes out of us and gets everything around us wet. Okay? You don't think globally, okay? You just think about the challenges right here. You know, like we talked about earlier, you know, the brokenness just right here in Grayson, Smith, and Wythe counties. You don't have to go all of Southwest Virginia. I mean, it seems like an insurmountable task, right? Because our culture, our whole culture has shifted. I know that sounds kind of like the religious right stuff from, you know, 20 years ago, this culture war idea, but it's, I mean, some of that's true. But there's like this, our whole world, our whole culture has changed, you know, this information revolution and everything, and it's just like there's, it's just at the top of this hill starting to roll off, right, with this brokenness just endemic all around us. And it seems like there's just so much momentum behind that. To think about changing all of that and getting all of that stopped and headed back up the hill and over to the other side. It seems insurmountable, doesn't it? Yeah. It seems like, well, there should be some government program for that. All right, or what's our initiative going to be? What's, you know, what's RCC's, you know, part in this? What's our movement going to be? You know, what's a, let's cast a vision for our program. But I want to think about what Jesus, some things that Jesus did. Let's look at Mark 10. And they came to Jericho. So he's on his way to Jerusalem, right? You think he might be, he's a little preoccupied at this point. He's on his way to Jerusalem to die. And they came to Jericho, and as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a great crowd, Bartimaeus, a blind beggar, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." And many rebuked him, telling him to be quiet. But he cried aloud all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped and said, "Call him. Come over here." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart. Get up. He's calling you." Throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" The blind man said, "Rabbi, let me recover my sight." And Jesus said, "Go your way. Your faith has made you well." And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him on the way. And it's just one little random example. But Jesus did this all the time. Jesus had this goal. He had this program. He had this direction that he knew his life and death and resurrection were going. You know, this big picture idea. But what was he always doing on a day-to-day basis? He was loving the person right in front of him. You know, whatever, when he encountered somebody who needed love, he loved them. Whenever he encountered a need, he met it. When he encountered a hurt, he healed it. Right? Just what he did. Just what his life was shaped like. So you don't have to have, we don't have to have this, you know, this grand program to rescue this world. Let me say that again. We do not have to have a grand program to rescue this world. God is already doing that. What you have to do is love the person right in front of you right now. Intentionally and unequivocally. That may look like giving some money away. Most of the time, that's not the answer. Sometimes it is, and when it is, we should give it generously and lavishly. We should not give it to palliate our conscience. We should not give it to get out of the situation and avoid something that's more meaningful and actually is what's called for. That could mean, it could be anything. Back in Isaiah 58, well, the passage we read, it said, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. See, this stuff doesn't start, you know, in another part of the world. For us to be the righteous, it starts, of course, I hope it goes without being said, it starts with God invading our hearts, right? Hope you guys know I'm talking about that. It starts in your home. In your house. It has to be rooted there. You know, our marriages, our families, again, should be this, should just stand out like this oasis in a desert. Right? And that's why there's so much about all of that stuff in Proverbs. It talks so much about how to get along interpersonally, how to choose the right mate, right? It said, man, if you a quarrelsome woman, you might as well move out. You're better off living on a rooftop, right? So everything from the decisions we make in a mate to how we get along to how you raise your children, all of it is so all-encompassing. And righteousness encompasses all of that. Talks about debt. Talks about working hard. Right? And it talks about building wealth. To give a gift to your children's children. Man, I can't even, you know, pay the power bill. You know? If you want to give a coat to somebody, Jesus, think about it. What did Jesus say about having two coats? He said, if you have two coats and you see a neighbor in need, what did he say? And if you don't give him one of your coats, what's the quote? I can't remember it. The love of God, how can the love of God dwell in you? Is that what he said? Something roughly like that, Steve? You think? I don't feel so bad now. What do you have to give your neighbor a coat? What? Two coats. If you want two coats, according to Proverbs, what do? You get off your butt and you work. You don't do stupid things with your money, right? Now, of course, there's people who have challenges in their lives and there's extenuating circumstances, and it's, you know, we're assuming that you're, you know, assuming none of that's the case, right? But if you do this, if you find a need and fill it, whether it's on the other side of the world and you pool your resources and you seek to, you know, seek justice and you seek to get somebody in another hemisphere, you know, on their feet. Or whether your child needs some of your attention. You find a need and you fill it. One is not greater than the other, except for the fact that you are explicitly responsible for the people right in front of you and your family. Find a need and fill it. Find a hurt. Heal it. You don't have to look very far. See either one. But, again, the wages of the righteous. What you get for engaging in this is life. It's good. It's not a heavy weight. It's not something you do out of dread or guilt or shame. It's life. The wages of the righteous is life. But the earnings of the wicked are sin and death. One of the, I should have put this on here, but just now thought of it. I'll say this and I'm going to shut up. One of the dominant metaphors that runs throughout the Bible, or at least from Israel's time to the very end, is vineyards and vines, right? Okay? In a lot of the Hebrew scriptures, you know, God planted a vineyard, which was the people of Israel, you know, in this land. And sometimes it would be broken into, and it would be, you know, under the control of someone else, or someone else would harvest it, or sometimes it would be burnt down, or something. Then he, you know, would rip it up and replant it. And so, you know, the people were this vineyard, these vines. And it's kind of that same theme, that same thought, that same metaphor is continued all through the New Testament, you know, until we get to the point where, who is the vine? Jesus, yeah. Who are the branches? Yeah, and so sometimes, you know, you have this vine and the branches and this vineyard, and sometimes what happens to the branches who, sometimes new branches are what? Huh? You grafted in, new branches are grafted in, yeah, that would be us. And what happens to the branches who don't bear fruit? They cut off and cast into the fire, all right? And this is a controlling metaphor, and it's different, the variations on that theme all throughout the scriptures. What's the fruit? What's the fruit? Huh? Righteousness. Love, joy, peace, goodness, gentleness, patience, and kindness. Against these there is no law. You see why I say that's the point? That's the fruit that our lives are supposed to bear. That sounds incredibly good. And it sounds worth working on. It sounds worth taking seriously. And actually, it sounds worth rejoicing over.